is a production of Cornell University.
It is 4:48, and we are starting the student assembly meeting on Thursday, February 5th, 2015. Thank you, everyone, for coming out today. We appreciate the time you take to participate in shared governance. Chelsea, whenever you're ready, would you mind calling the roll? Here.
Excuse. Unexcused.
Golden.
Henderson. Excused. Johnson.
Thompson.
Here.
LaPointe.
Here.
Lee.
Here.
And here. Lisa Liu.
Here.
LaFont.
Here.
Raglan.
Excuse.
Sally.
Unexcused.
Oh,
here.
Thank you so much. Before we do anything else, we're going to go into open microphone with EVP Batista.
Hello to everybody in the audience. Open microphone is a time for any community members to come forward and bring an issue or concern to the student assembly. If you wish to do so, please come forward to the microphone and state your name, net ID, and year. And seeing none, we're going to close open microphone.
So now we're going to go into announcements and reports. First on the agenda is open course evaluation announcement by Representative Fridman. Would you like me to come back to you? All right, we'll do that next. First is Representative Johnson.
Hi, everyone. I just wanted to announce real quickly that the Arts Advisory Board meeting started with the UCB Council. I think we're responsible to have any the IR school or the advisory team, advisory to the students that have to travel. This is going to be tomorrow. And for CLP, one of our committee members, community, community, and non-MSA member, created a safety survey to address safety and accidents. So, if you guys could all fill it out, that would be really helpful. I'll talk to you again. And also, if y'all popularize it, so that people can have, like, okay, if we're going to feel okay falling in there, we're going to make it.
Thanks so much. Next is a North Campus Study Space Report by Freshman Representative Liu.
February 2015, May 2015, September 2015, and January 2016 to track our progress. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Erin. Next is representative from Representative Lisa Liu. By EVP Batista.
Hi everyone, just wanted to thank you all again last semester for supporting Resolution 20, which is in recognition of AIDS Awareness Week. Coming out of that resolution is the Condom Store Fashion Show, which is being held on campus tomorrow night, 7 p.m., 777 Stewart Avenue, which is Alpha Delta Phi fraternity. It's also being supported by Haven, the International Students Union, the Women's Resource Center, McFab, which comes out of Alana, Fan Club, as well as the Women's Resource Center. It's a huge cross program across the campus. It's free, and it's a suggested $3 donation. So it'd be awesome if you guys could be there, especially since we passed the resolution last semester.
Last but not least, open course valuations by Representative Friedman. Thanks so much, Joseph. So even though our agenda says that President Skorton is next, he technically won't be here until 5:30. I'm sorry for the wait. But right now we're going to go straight into business of the day. First is Resolution 36, divestment from coal towards a sustainable endowment. Is there a second?
Second.
I actually am going to ask for unanimous consent on this suspension of the agenda, considering the timeliness. there any objection to that? Seeing none, we will suspend this until the end of our meeting. First, we're going to move until Resolution 44, changes to SAFC guidelines. So you have 4 minutes to introduce.
Hello, everybody. The SAFC co-chairs are planning on being here. I thought we were going to be going after previous resolutions, so I just want to send them down and help explain some of the details. But I will just sort of go into the SAFC guidelines and some of the changes that we decided to make. We evaluate these every year. We're trying to make some changes that will be as permanent as possible, so we are going to constantly inspecting the guidelines. These are guidelines that govern over about 500 student organizations that apply for roughly $1.5 to $2 million of funds every year through the SAFC. These are the rules that sort of govern them. I'll go through and explain each change. Most of them are pretty small, but some have sort of a substantive difference. And it's through appropriations committee. And so if you guys want to pull out the appendix. The first change is the price flow change. They've always been needed to evaluate half, and that's what this change does. The second change is related to when you can apply, when you apply for funding. So a lot of times student organizations will get back, they need that overtime for funding because it's like they don't have to register for SECA until it's too late in the process. So we move the required dates earlier in the spring so that students don't apply by July. The next change is reflective of the initial tier assessment. I'm going to have Melissa, when she gets here, explain it in a little bit more detail. But the biggest difference is that what it really functionally means is a lot of organizations that come in who might only need up to $500 in funding in the first semester, they automatically get bumped into a tier of about $1,500. And many of these organizations don't necessarily need that money, so that causes a lot of issues with efficiency sometimes. Spending initially associated with that. So that change that we made is going to help those stay in the tier that's most appropriate for them. Next, and this is a pretty substantial change, it's something that people should consider. We said permanently affected the efficiency spending percentage to 85%. That determines what tiers you can move in and out of. And we believe that this 85% will be set for the next 5 to 10 years at least. So we decided to make it permanent. The JIS comment talks to the two B's that are required to be submitted to cancel certain spending. We've always forced two B's to spend all the PowerPoint when they communicate bids, and we're just trying to add some consistency here. The next comment to this is just to clarify some language that we didn't change when the tiers were instituted a couple of years ago. The next change comment section is to provide a bright line, so a very clear bright line to when students and organizations are allowed to appeal. In the past, we didn't have a time that indicated when you were allowed to appeal. We had issues with organizations emailing us 2 weeks after the decisions were made. We were sort of in a bind, and we always granted them the ability to appeal, even though there's such a long time period. This sort of speeds up the process for us and provide some clarity to the organization. Comment 89 are two different, those are, the next one, comment 9 actually is substantial. It's previously written that any time that the SAFC was overruled in a decision, that automatically a resolution had to be written within 10 days changing the guideline. It's pretty impractical and also isn't necessarily always the best way to go about it, and you might be changing the guideline. Twice a semester. So what this does is it encourages what already happens, which is that when major changes occur, we make the changes every semester or hopefully every year, and those are adjusted moving forward.
Motion to extend by 2 minutes.
What?
Granted. You have 2 more minutes.
Okay, sorry, I'm trying to speed up a little bit. The next change discusses the prohibitive expenses. We had an issue with Journal of this last semester regarding organizations that have goods that are used, you know, that are sales and jerseys every semester. So the old rule was that you would be allowed to have goods like that as long as multiple people could use it. But we ran across an issue with a band organization last semester. They basically claimed that we had to shoes, multiple people to use them, and that caused them some controversy. So what we did was we clarified the language to say that as long as multiple individuals can use it over a period of time, even if one individual is
guys, come up.
That works. And then it's actually perfect timing. The last thing we need to talk about is the changes in terms of performance reporting and the questions that we changed in the form. So if you guys just want to talk to why we changed the question, the performance reporting question, we might be able to.
All right, so one of the things that we saw as a result of the old performance reporting questions was that they were either too vague or weren't objective enough. And one of the things that we use performance reporting questions for is to determine which club gets to be in the highest tier, which right now is at $7,500, so as you can see, it's a very significant amount of money. We've also made sure that our questions try to encompass the club's impact on campus, how many people they bring to their events, how many people, again, they affect their reputation, etc. And we found that this would be super helpful in determining how much these clubs deserve to be in the performance tier. Additionally, we've also come up with a rating system with points to make sure that we're being completely transparent as to how we're looking at the application for performance reporting. So there are now, instead of the old questions, we have about 11 questions that all the clubs have to address, and then for club 14, we have additional.
Great. So your time has actually just expired. So great timing, guys. For everyone, this is Spencer and Marissa. They run the SAFC. If anyone has any questions or comments, anyone in the audience as well, make sure you just raise your hand so that I can see you and raise it high so I can make sure I don't miss you. That would be great. First liaison, Taglia.
Thank you. Question.
I can answer that. Well, for that section, which is what we just did, we just deleted that whole section. And I guess we reworded the question to be.
So that's just like a truncated message. Basically, when we were making an edit, and that's clear to me that we showed this to you, we just deleted all the old questions, and we put in, you know, we put the new questions in. So the one that's relevant to is the first question, which is describe your organization's impact on campus community for our representation and unique contribution to student life, especially relative to other similar groups. So we had some issues with the that previous question. People were very vague, and people can sort of say, you know, it was really hard to compare, you know, how big of an impact the dance crew had on Cornell's campus and how they sort of, you know, made themselves known versus, you know, any other organization. So this was a better job, you know, making that comparison.
Rep down.
Hi, guys. UNC currently is not a final funding, and I understand that they're not able to provide any funding. I'm wondering if you could clarify for me where the money is going.
To clarify in terms of what constitutes whether or not you're going to do that UNC funding?
Yes,
sir.
I think that
so I'm assuming the reason that I have to look at the case in more particular, but I'm assuming the reason is that they're not a registered student organization in FLECA. So if you're not a registered student organization, like most of them majority are, you are not eligible for state funding. I'm happy to continue this conversation. It's an important one sort of after. But basically what happened was they missed their deadline for allowing funding that ultimately made them not funding for emergency, and if they're not registered with an organization, at least individual or returning tourists and that may not be eligible to receive funding.
So NGLC falls also off of alternatives are in different space, so that's why two separate entities, and that's why they can't apply for this.
And to clarify, those conversations have already been happening.
Yes,
on that part. Also, for anyone in the audience who does not have a copy of the agenda but would like one, Juliana was just passing out some hard copies. There might not be enough for everyone, but if you give us your net ID, Juliana will come around and get them at some point, but if you give us your net ID, we will forward an electronic copy of the agenda so that you can follow along. Is there anyone else who has any comments, questions, motions regarding this resolution?
Motion to vote. Second.
So there's been a motion to vote on the floor. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we will go into voting. First, Parliamentarian Berger will describe the voting on this. Excellent. So we are going to do a placard vote on this. If you're in favor of this resolution, please raise your placard. All right, if you're opposed. And if you'd like to abstain. All right, by a vote of 20-1-0, the resolution does pass. Moving on to the next item on our agenda, thank you guys so much for coming, by the way, is we're going to go into new business, actually, February break services, resolution 42. While they're setting up, is there anyone in the audience who needs an electronic version of the agenda? You can just raise your hand or shout out. All right. I don't see anyone. All right, so whenever you guys are ready, you have 4 minutes to introduce.
So this resolution was basically a response to student concerns about the options available for library study hours, for guidance and also for fitness center hours that are available to students if they get their first period. And now the grade is quite new, a lot of years, the services aren't as planned as other grades also, all grades and student grades. So we took a lot of student feedback and contacted basically the dining committee and from the library council or in the process. And as well as looking at services, field service, how that changes over the years. And basically, this is
and also the fact that a lot of students is right after the break, and the break is very short, so a lot of students are not afford to, are not going to be going off, so they are all going to stay. A lot of people will stay during the February break, and I also contacted the residential advisor, and they give me the specific data that shows there is more students staying here than normal break. I think a lot of resources are very needed.
Just one additional thing you mentioned, that we brought the dining executive and the union life one of our representatives, Brown, is going to have something with the discrepancy of monitoring board when it does become business today. We want to clarify the language of what the flexibility of auto cooperation are. We'll probably outline it says after the payment offering period, the library is encouraged to have a convenient location open to all students 16 hours a day from the residential area. So once that becomes a business today,
you can motion at any time to amend.
So once this is, we're done, we find a little fun. So I think part of the reason we got this position is also because February break, according to the calendar, is set in 2017, and we thought this was a good time to really evaluate it, given that, you know, the break has happened for 1 year, and we can really evaluate now and see what services we're receiving from Washington State.
You also noticed that in time for the launch of 41, we can't allow the services to pass on to our interpretation pack. We want to work out at least three that are available. So we thought we could do that in terms of a pamphlet that we can have to be outside of the library.
So now I motion to amend line 34 after we say and expand the Clayton offering period. The library is encouraged to have a convenient location open to all students at 16 hours a day from any
Could you repeat that slowly one more time?
After the offering period, the library is encouraged to have a convenient location open to all students at 16 hours of the day for any residential area.
Chelsea, did you get that? All right, so we are going to move into discussion on the amendment only. I do have people down for the speakers list for the resolution as a whole, but if you would like to speak on the amendment, you should let me know now. First is Representative Friedman. Okay, sorry. Next is Rep. Tipton.
I was just wondering if you could clarify the amendment that I was saying that. So you said the library is encouraged to have a convenient location open to all students for 16 hours. I don't think in the last paragraph in the residential area. Can we review by that?
Yeah. So first of all, the way that libraries are currently scheduled, they're specifically CAM, which first of all, that's the late night offering came from. And then the reason why we want to the residential area is because people live in Paulson, North, the what we would encourage the library to do is something essential because that's convenient for all residential locations. I hope that was clear enough.
Next is Representative Yang. Anyone else would like to speak on the amendment or make a motion regarding the amendment? Rep. Hoffman?
So, if I understand correctly, the amendment will have libraries open 16 hours a day?
That's the recommendation.
Okay,
yeah.
Right. So why is, like, what will happen? So right now the libraries are open 8 hours a day. Why would 16 be better?
Well, you're open 24/7.
Not during February, right?
Right. Because having more late night offerings and more hours is better for students, especially when they have the multitude of exams where they're great based on the way that the faculty schedule their exams. So when people are probably who aren't chances to study anymore, based on the trends of last year, they can really can't be based on 1 year, they start trying to participate while the library is important to do that because we can see what are the optimal effective times to have libraries that you can use them. How
can you make
the
experience
of students
staying
on campus?
Liam,
on
the target. Just a quick clarification. The amendment that just lies at the time, you're asking for 16 hours to register for the library in general for all the years.
Yeah,
but
for the schedule changes after that.
Next is Rep. Keeley.
When
information. Isn't the darn call library and the pharmacy library open 24/7 to the grid?
So they have a really good hour inspector at all library.
Okay, next is Representative Brown. Also, I'd like to remind all the community members here that this is a recommendation, which means community members do get to vote on this. So feel free, if you have any comments, questions, concerns, to raise those throughout the discussion. Next is Representative Friedman. So there's been a call to question on the amendment. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? You have 30 seconds to explain your dissent. Okay, so ask your question. List, so if there's any comments, questions, or motions at this time. Yeah, there's been two motions. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we will go into a vote on the amendment. Remember, it's just a majority vote for the amendment. Please raise your placard if you're in favor. Alright, please raise your placard if you're opposed. And please raise your placard if you'd like to abstain. So by a vote of 21-0-1, this amendment does pass, which means that we're going back into the discussion on the resolution as a whole. If there's anyone who would like to get on speakers list, please let me know, including anyone in the audience. I really encourage you, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, to speak up. First is Representative Titcom.
Hi, guys. I just have two quick comments to make. I think this is a great idea, but I was just wondering, so a lot of resources are staff having residents, including people who do work in the library, business owners in the library, as well as the staff involved, a very large portion. So therefore, I was thinking that they aren't staff because a lot of students aren't here. So I was wondering if you could address that.
I think part of the concern is actually not even staffing a lot in terms of the hours. So if we can like use these hours as an optional time to use the access, so it's not going to choose between going to the library or going to the gym, which are things that we use that way. We can really coordinate that with like something like the bio option. So you don't necessarily have to use homework staff, and you can have a little bit of time.
Thank you all for that. Are there a lot of things? Do you want to get a quick question?
Well, we can't make assumptions, but considering you take assumptions for great meals right now, the large majority of the guests have their reasons. We can go further, but I think we are assuming that we have to be able to follow all the rules.
Next is Representative Yang.
My question is that I do think this is a great resolution. I was here last February. I expected to see you, expected to get from this report. I was wondering what are my requirements for the office? Because this is very close to the time I did spend my entire break working. So I wasn't out and about the entire time. Though there are a lot of students, most of them do kind of see and I know that the design services were quite adequate. I would love to have all the location where they have lunch, where they have work. I thought that was surviving. So if you could explain to me more, like, what you're looking for in terms of finding more honorable or what is more attractive than that.
So the dining, I actually talked to the North Campus administrator, and she said that will be closed and our studio will be open at normal hours. I think the another side of this resolution is we want to have the type of hours so students know that what is opening and what is closed.
We're also trying to look into the package around one of the things we want to do as well.
The reason a lot of other schools are contingent on the library is because of a lot of cafes that are going to be older. So things like that are kind of interesting. I didn't have to switch that. You can pass that around. What I just gave our representative game was what the plan is
Next up is Thaddeus Talbot, actually. You can come up here and use the microphone if that's okay.
Well, thank you guys for bringing the resolution forward. I just had a quick question. Just about the due diligence that we've done. Have you spoken to any students about their experiences over February break? February break is coming up pretty soon, and so this did go into effect every time I went to the next year. So I just wanted to know if you're interested in learning about having a couple of very great experiences and get out of that for the December of the
day. Yeah, I mean, I have a chance to say here, but whether they were going to be national meetings or whether they were going to be working with that, I've approached a lot of them regarding their experience and their experience about, you know, can you start, you are a statistic, can you use this for our question in the future, understand what are the possible times things will bring what works, what didn't work? So that's like right now for this February, the encouragement to the library to keep you as a major point of contention, that's the future February. And then everything that we collect as a student member, we hope to give it to future student members when they go into discussions about the academic calendar, which can't be reviewed until 2017.
All right, next is Rep. Goldman.
So there's a lot to worry about the aspect of it, because that's going to be through our program. So that's a good challenge. Information about the library.
expand upon that there are people who live off campus, whether it be on the marsh or in college town and other places. If you see a systematic way that you can go about doing that, we would be more likely to figure out how to do that. So us and reach out to your work and residential programs if you're really on board and want to do that for all of you know and find a systematic way to do it. I'd also reach out if you want a set of information as well that graduate students, you don't want to use those graduate students something. That's why I'm trying to help the first person to GPSA on them. So I do also kind of help us figure out a way to systematically bring you off campus first. I think we'd be willing to.
All right, next on the speakers list is VP Tyall.
As an international student who stayed in Iqbal for a long secondary grade, I think it's a very pertinent resolution. And while it's well intentioned, it can be more effective and substantive. And I have two major questions in that respect. So the first question is regarding your third being further resolved clause. It says that committee create pamphlets about available dining halls and things like that. I think the Cornell VP communications is here. I just went through my mailbox. Cornell does send an email about activities and things going on during February break. So is there any way you want to collaborate with them and actually use a cheaper means to create more awareness about things going on in February break? My second question regarding the same resolve clause is, are pamphlets really the most effective way of going about this? They are extremely expensive, especially for an organization that uses student money. So would you want to look at more online means instead of pamphlets? With regards to the first resolve clause, have libraries, dining halls, and fitness centers ever kept data about people entering them and leaving them? So I just feel that this is not as realistic, and this can be probably all, and if they have, then that's great. And if they haven't, then I feel it's not as good. But I think it's very well intentioned, but with a few, you know, with a few changes to actually make this implementable, I think it can go a long way.
Everyone, there are a few people who just walked in that this is new business, so you can feel free to ask comments or questions. And also, if you don't have a copy of our agenda and you would like one, just raise your hand and then we can send you an electronic version. Also, President Horton just got here, perfect timing, and I'm going to ask that we suspend the conversation on this resolution for now, and we'll continue it at 6 o'clock. Yeah, you guys could keep some of those things up there, please, so that... I'd like to welcome President Gorton, Joel Molina, VP Susan Murphy, and Dean Hubble. So to clarify for everyone here, any student in the room has the opportunity to ask questions, express concerns, etc. It'll work the same way. If you raise your hand, I'll just make a list, first come, first serve. The way our guidelines have it, it's every two assembly members, one community member. But everyone gets to speak once before someone else gets to speak again. Does everyone understand? Awesome. So without further ado, you guys can open if you would like.
So it's good to be here. I know the students got a note from me today about student health fee, which is going to be starting this fall. And purposely, I had that come out on the day that I'm going to be with you in the USA to really talk about the issue in English and the community. So, and I want to give you a little preamble to that issue. Although, we're here to talk about anything you want to talk about, obviously, not going to be the student health fee. So, I have a peculiar perspective on this as a physician. And also a father besides the president. And the offerings of our health services at the center have been expanded in recent years and are very, very high quality. And after a long period of realizing that we need the more revenue to continue to offer an increasing range and intensity of services, we got to the point of making a decision to assess the health fee. Most of our care institutions do that. Swiss would correct me, I think 5 or 7 IDs have health fee. Most of our care institutions have much higher health fee than we do. But because of a long period of very careful assessment and planning with Dr. Murphy and of course, the right service did, we're able to come up with a number that we think is manageable. No fee is popular. And there will be people for whom the fee will be a burden. There's no question about that. But the point of it is to have a reliable revenue stream to continue to have level of quality of health care and payments that we need, and to have it adjustable in an automatic sense based on the student enrollment. Then we'll look at about 2 out of 3 undergraduates, roughly, about 30% or so of graduates. Something like that. So essentially, bare bones, I noticed about it today, and that's how I'm going to develop a series of meetings where I think this is really more details than we discussed. But share it with the time frame that we have until 6 to 9, of course, we're going to answer questions about it, and not be limited, of course, by the half hours we have with the SA. The other thing I want to mention is that at the request of all the shared governance groups, including but not limited to the ESA, I've developed a full explanation of university finances right now that I'm going to deliver next week to the deans and vice presidents. And then after that, Sarah will be invited to meet the heads of all the shared governance groups or a piece of that group. We will organize this by Dr. Murphy's lights, the town hall meeting later this semester, to talk about finances writ large. We can talk about this issue, but writ large. And then, depending on how the leaders of the shared governance groups feel after our meeting with all of you together, we will do our best to make people available to individual shared governance groups. But I'm going to do this presentation myself and start doing it by using the same. So that's just some opening thoughts, and of course we're going to talk about student health fee reimbursement plans. Thanks a lot for having us.
All right, so we already have a pretty lengthy speakers list. Anyone in the audience, make sure you raise your hand high so that I can see you. All right, I have you both down. First is VP Stefanko.
Thanks, Sarah. First of all, thank you so much for coming, and thank you for the work that it looks like will be happening surrounding financial transparency and sharing that with the shared governance groups. I certainly think it's a step in the right direction. I'm going to ask a few questions about the student health fee because I think it's a topic that definitely blindsided a lot of students today or seemed to be a surprise to a lot, and definitely I heard a lot of negative sentiment surrounding it. So the first two are more logistical. My first question is just to have some more information regarding where the costs are going to, whether or not they're entirely dedicated to the fees associated with increased health care, and how that $350 is sort of spread out throughout how those funds are going to be spent. The second is surrounding financial aid. Like you said, a lot of students are going to be negatively affected by this. I've heard a lot of sentiment from you regarding why tuition increases are okay is because we sort of bring that, we bring the financial aid up with it. So if we're increasing, the funds by $350, are we going to be covering this as well, or is this going to be another lack of funding like with SHIP? And then the final one is sort of a broader question about transparency, and it sounds like you're getting, we're moving in the right direction, but I think this feels, at least from our perspective, in the short conversations that we've had, that it was sort of a unilateral decision made by higher ups in the university, and there wasn't a lot of conversation. I know, I was in a few meetings, but there was very limited conversation with people within the student assembly, and when we had those conversations, the decision seemed to already have been made. So when decisions like that, things like the calendar changes that happened a couple of years ago, when we're consistently sort of wanting to be a part of this shared governance system, I've been on it. I've been on this assembly for 3 years. We're not necessarily getting the results always that we're seeing. We don't feel like we're in the conversation as early as we need to be for issues that that are very directly affecting undergraduate students. This issue more than anything else I've seen in a lot of ways over the past 3 years is very directly affecting us, and probably the majority of campus heard about it after the decision was made, probably a few months ago. So those are the questions. Thank you.
The fee is going to go for the operation of the health services. That's it. It's all going to go for that. It's not going to be used for anything else. So that's the first question. The last question about transparency is against the commercial people, second one. And the question about transparency is a very rare question. And my proposal has been imperfect. I'm the first one to admit that. There are some decisions that are made at the university that are informed by opinion of constituents, but nonetheless have to be made anyway. They're usually not popular decisions. A very good example of that every single year is the tuition allowance. And there have been a handful of decisions that I've made in two presidencies I've had where I've managed to take the public necessary to do, and this is one of them. I can't apologize for the decision because I believe it's the right decision. I can't apologize for the imperfection and transparency as time has gone on. And I want to say, and I'm not angry to say this, but Dr. Martin will confirm that my decision to radically increase student financial aid was also a very unpopular decision by a separate group of constituents. So once in a while, the person in charge of some certain area, in this case it was me, has to make a decision. And my judgment is that the revenue streams available in the expansion of the services, the types of services, and the health care providers that we met was not going to be possible to be covered. And I thought it was important to make this decision rather than saddle the president with a decision that perhaps could have been made even before. We've gone a long time without health fee, and I hope you'll take the opportunity, I know you will, to research this. I talk to our friends and colleagues in the other schools, you'll find that most of them have health fee, and many of those health fees are a lot higher than that. But assertion about the imperfection of transparency is a good one. It's accurate. I wouldn't argue with that. And part of the reason that I developed this PowerPoint presentation explanation, a very, very detailed explanation of what's happening in the university's finances, is to be more transparent. And I give you the bottom line on this occasion that the margin, if you want to look at it that way, on the other campus, with a $2.2 billion budget, that's a margin of non-funds left over at the end of the year, is in the order of magnitude of $2-4 million, so less than a percent, considerably less than a percent. And what I'm going to try to do, and you'll let me know how successful is Sarah when I present the shared governance groups, is try to help people understand where the money comes from and where the money goes. But in this particular case, these funds can help your earmark for the operation of Health Services Center. Not for the building, not for capital costs, but for programming costs. And please correct anything I said and jump in.
We knew that we had insufficient
and could have been issued maybe 2.5 times or 3 times instead of twice. I don't know. It was an educated guess, an estimate of what was needed. And the two things that are not, that are less easily predictable with precision is what the scientific body is going to be years and years in the future. And as Dr. Murphy said, this per capita sort of funding will be a self-correcting mechanism to correct that. But the other one is what will be needed. And once again, for example, in the tough year that we had in H1N1 in the area of the suicide clusters, we had needs in areas in the average year, you see what I'm saying, we wouldn't actually know. We wouldn't actually need. And so the fact that you have experiences or colleagues of yours have experiences of being inadequately served is very important information for us. But it's one of the things that we try to keep our eye on. And the use of the verb guarantee will experience again never happens again, that would be disingenuous to say that. But I think to have, at least in my mind, I think to have a clear gap between will lessen the likelihood that we will be funded with insufficient services as there's raises in numbers to become cancer.
I'd love to talk to you specifically about the case, because if we have a student in urgent need, there should not ever be an answer that they can't get help. It could be that if they had a concern about an urgent need, they might be getting delayed for the urgency, but I'd love to have you follow up on that so I can understand that. It's a number. At the final time, we know that it's a spike. And so while we staff for what we can imagine is a sort of steady demand, we try to have the flexibility to staff up from, with some local resources, and our resources have been limited. So this will help to some extent along those lines. Again, because it's in a prepaid mode, it may help to get a better feel for what the demand will be. But let's talk individually about the ticket box. That concerns me as well.
And just one other thing. If there's uneasiness about bringing particular cases forward, which is very understandable, just a sort of redacted version of what happened. You know, student X had this experience, and if it was possible for us to know when it occurred, that would be very, very helpful. If you don't know about like it was on this date or something. So most of the service, it's real confusing. Let me just put it this way. There's two general models for funding any organization as multiple parts. It's a very bold generalization. One model is the so-called allocation model, where someone in the executive position in the university or organization decides this unit or that unit based on prior experience, how they end up at the end of the year, what will cost, and the quality of services, and quantity of services, whatever the services are, should have this sort of application. That's the system under which we work in some aspects of the university. The other kind of model is the so-called responsibility-centered model, responsibility-centered management, where revenue comes into a particular unit, and that unit is responsible for all its own expenses, then there's no need for allocation. Now, the way these kind of nonprofits work is that usually it's a combination, some hybrid of those two things. But in the case of Gannett, it was not separable, just as Dr. Murphy suggested, in a way where there was a feedback mechanism for funds to go by the size of potential patient population, if I can use that term. And I'm calling it patient population only in the sense that when a student or faculty staff walk across that threshold, they're a patient. And so this is actually, the reason I support this idea, it's a move in that direction of a direct self-directed feedback mechanism, at least for the numbers. What this will not do, it will not automatically feedback mechanism for unanticipated major problems. So if we get another infectious disease epidemic or some kind of campus, we won't be possible to keep up with that. We might as well be open about that right now. And so the idea is to have a self-correcting method of having basic human infrastructure, programmatic infrastructure, not the building, not that kind of infrastructure. And then the judgment, the leadership, which I very firmly believe we have at the Institute of Academic Services, to adjust that as is needed. And that would be how I would express it to you.
Yeah, next is Tyler. You can come up and use the microphone.
Thank you everyone for your time. I think we all appreciate you coming out and meeting to share your answers. So with any sort of increase in any kind of tuition or fees, there's going to be an unpopular thing with the students. So I was wondering if there were any other options considered to best fund the capital services for that cap. Can it help sort of with operation costs? And with that, if there was any reason why the student health fee is chosen over all of those other options.
Let me pick up on one of this, but I'm going to turn over to the people who are like, if I'm mistaken. The operation of the health service is not going to be based entirely on the IC. There are students who decide to buy into C-ship, and those kinds of things. There are traditional women in both cases, and only a small company continuing to make this, and then there will be help. And there is, I'm going to get in a second, but the reason for me to come from the student's contributions quite directly. Then separately, there is still an allocation for the university. And so this is a hyper-system, as I mentioned, this comes to the problem of question earlier. So the reason this was chosen was not in contradistinction to something else that was already going on. It's because of the tightness of the university's bottom line, that the allocation of certainty has not been enough to keep up with. And in this regard, without deflecting the conversation at all, this is a microcosm of what's happening in healthcare across the whole country, where we're straining to pay for the services that people need or what people desire. So what you might ask is, what one of the things I learned is why do we need to go into the university? And it's because the people in charge tried other ways of doing it, which was still a better system, based partly on allocation, partly on the senior ship, and the co-pays. And the judgment of the model that got the release of policy, which I think is very robust modeling, is that in many cases, this is actually going to be a diminution in the actual out-of-pocket expense. And we hope when that is realized that it will lower the barrier, the fiscal barrier, the psychological barrier, going to get health services. But there will be other cases, as we said, where students will not be able to get health services, where it will not lower, will be an increase in output. And what I'm hoping as a doctor is that inhibition of the willingness to go into the net when someone needs that number will be lowered because you can't get bit by bit for those services that they'll be covered by this. And that's a big part of human resources and the philosophy of doing this is to lower your financial barrier. There's other barriers that have nothing to do with finances, like the stigma of going in for certain kinds of not just mental health but other things as well. Services, especially transmitted diseases, a lot of other things. But at least with the financial barrier, I believe will be lower. And there's evidence in other settings that does lower the financial barrier. But, you know, one could clearly argue that the university should have done is just increase the allocation, continue to increase it. But you can't count on that being done with margin is so narrow, which is what I mean. And once again, because of my insistence, I'm increasing the financial aid so radically, a lot of our resources have gone to financial aid. I understand by this decision. But the margin is small. And I hope the margin will be bigger in years to come and new leadership with a bigger margin and increase the conversion. But I think this is a very reasonable way to go now.
Thank you.
they got it and I'll get out of my super extra fees very quickly. But we actually spend an awful lot of time looking at, is there a way that for our students who are not on their own insurance, because it's all kind of self-contained, we could do more direct billing of all the other insurance companies. And as we model that and also solve some external compensation feedback, that was A, that might well increase the out-of-pocket expenses that the students. The other issue that we have is with the changing healthcare, as the president mentioned, we're seeing increasing narrowing of networks, for in-network and out-of-network. And that, so we're seeing students who are delaying or denying access to some of the care they need because of that issue. And so some of that basic stuff, which will go away because you're going to have to pay to see. If you want to be a student of the care, I'd be happy to talk to some of our colleagues about all the work we did in looking at building insurance directly. I can't be that expertise, but we have that, and we have to share that with you.
Next is Rep. Johnson. Sorry.
So I have a couple questions that are going to be hard. I wanted to first commend the students to the other carbon neutrality plan. And I have a couple questions. So the first part of the question is, I've been really involved in the sustainability community on campus. I think the one area that's kind of been lacking with regard to sustainability is student involvement. So how do you intend to increase student engagement in the COVID 35 plan, especially since a lot of the work that you're doing? The second question has to do with the subject of transparency you spoke of. So, do you think the university discussion since this 2055 message kind of shows how important sustainability is on the ground? Do you think that we consider publicly announcing our sustainability control, similar to how we approach the government in the community and why and why?
Great question, lacking student involvement in the actual development and details of it, you're correct. This is done largely by a group of faculty and staff professionals. So there's a lot of student involvement, which I feel is quite well with the Kyoto Knowledge Group that got us down this path to begin with. And I originally tried to be very open by crediting the students for this undergrad, especially, but also grad students. The reason I came to the reason that a lot of these things has been through student motivation. And so we need to get more student involvement. And Vice President of Facility Services, I've talked about that quite extensively. He's got some ideas. And if you don't want to send an email to David Gatsworth and get a comfortable moving forward with him, you can develop that relationship with him. Give your input. He can tell you where he's come so far. And I'm really good at him. Issue of investment, I'm the same place I was before on this, and I'll explain very briefly and not to filibuster on this. Stanford and other cities, we don't have any direct investment, it's cold here. And so, in fact, we were the first major campus in the United States, we're coal free on campus, and we also don't have direct investments in coal. We have nothing more, nor has any major campus that I'm aware of that's doing a big investment in fossil fuels. And the only reason I've ever stated for that, and I don't even have a chance to invest in the first year I was there, I asked for investment from selected companies operating in the government, is the narrowness of the margin. We just ended up talking about a topic where the students are being asked and the parents are being asked to help us with the revenue for what I think is a critical essential service. And is it possible, because I'm an investment expert, is it possible that we could invest? People I respect have told me effectively to minimize, and people I respect have told me effectively not to minimize. And since the margin is less than 1%, I have not been willing, I'm still not willing to take a chance on putting the campus back in there, having to lay out more staff, or to intend to change something about the student experience. I just don't like it. Now, as the margin of the university gets bigger, things will change, and of course, obviously, with new leadership. You know, I encourage you, as you were able to go down, to push you in this issue. But I think the thing that we can do is we have to change the way we live and the way we spend our money. And such a way that we can those are not mutually exclusive things, obviously not. But we're not all the way in person either. So hopefully, you know, you and I can find common ground in that regard. He's thinking of those things that was present one and the other. And keep talking to us about the best thing about how we, the sort of converse, how we can invest in things that have a sustainable return. And I think besides the renewable investments we have through the endowment, I'm very proud of the fact that we're buying all the energy in the wind farm. I'm very proud of the fact that we have that solar unit going in, the wind energy. And I'm hugely proud of combining our plan all the work that we've done. But we have a long journey before we get to 2035. I hope we can get there before then. But let's work on that tomorrow. So it's a great question.
Okay, actually, I think if you only have time for one more, I am going to skip an SA member. I took hands in the order that I saw them, but I want the students in the audience to be able to ask their questions. And the only other hand I saw in the audience was Michael Ferrer. So.
Hey, so I'm not particularly on any of the health committees for shared governance. I'm not a part of shared governance generally, but I do have friends who are on those committees, and something that seems to be common knowledge among folks who were part of these earlier conversations is that Jeanette has a pretty clear deficit. A deficit that isn't the fault of the people in this room, the students in this room, but a deficit that was created by an administration system 7 years ago. And so I guess what I'm wondering, and I'm looking for another reader, is how much of this new student health fee is really just to cover a deficit that exists as a result of a former policy?
Thank you very much for your question. Only a small amount of the overall deficit in this problem and deficit. I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but it's not a pretty deficit of I just want to admit that there is a little piece of that. It's not mostly there. But the other issue that I want to acknowledge publicly is that it is correct that this is a decision to make before, including my decision, let them without enough money to do what they need to do, given the increasing size of the student body number one. And the more, students coming from a broader variety of backgrounds who bring different needs to campus, a more variety of different needs. And finally, an environment in which the size of the campus and the diversity of the student body and the immense amount of travel students and so on puts us, in some sense, at higher risk for a wide variety of things like infectious disease. And so it is true that my calculation on the final person signed up on this application was not sufficient to get this done right. And I don't have confidence that myself or with respect to the next president will be able to predict with precision. And so I think some sort of a per capita fee that will adjust at least the size of the student body will go a long way. I can't promise guarantee that it'll cover it. But we'll make it much less likely that we'll develop some sort of a specific deficit. And especially sort of deficit will keep people who run Canada from having the people that can be responsible for the funding of any kind of sort of issue. So you're right, I'm just having no doubt about it. And this is going to make some sense of it. And maybe this is going to come about.
I think I want to address it this way. In the year that we had the health crisis, which is the H1N1 flu virus, so it's one in the same year, we had to increase our staffing to address some of the questions that Josh was raising about adequate access. Gannett had not been meeting for the budget cuts that we had come across the university. So we were told we needed to staff up medically and in the mental health area immediately, which we did, and we were able to do it because we had access to one-time funding that lasted up for 3 years. So to your point about Gannett being in a deficit, that one-time funding was not permanently replaced. That's the issue that we're trying to find out, that income stream that's in. There is a piece that I have important. I would love to inquire the staff that we hired to meet in the campus when that one-time funding ran out. So we did find a different mechanism to maintain that debt, and while we were trying to figure out the long-term debt back, I forget just how that dollar breakdown came through on the top of my head. So on the one hand, the comment about it being a deficit is true, but to run the net at the level that has the staff and the students that have the care, we have not had an increase in our allocation to do that. So your direct data is how we end up that the answer is yes. The fee going forward is not just to pay back for trying to figure out what we did in the halt in a couple of years, but it's setting us on the path for that long term stability. So that's the answer.
Yeah, you can finish the question.
Thank you for answering the question. To be honest, the one part of the question is, hasn't been answered still, and I can't imagine that it hasn't come up in administrative discussions and discussions with people in shared governance. What is the number? Right? What amount out of the fee, say in the first year, do they realize they're changing the time? In the first year, out of that $350, how much of that is going to pay a deficit?
Please let us know if there's more follow-up questions, and we'll answer them, of course.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. So, everyone that's here, if you have questions that you would like to be sent, and I will send the responses back to you, please email me at seb295, and I'll make sure that all of the questions that didn't have time to get answered today, I get answered.
Sarah, and if you and I on the chat about whether we may have some follow-up conversation on this topic in particular, after we talk about the happiness, we have to talk about it.
We will definitely follow up with you on that. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Next, we are going to move back into the discussion on February break. All who can are invited to stay for the riveting conversation. All right, there's a motion to make it business of the day. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we'll vote to make this business of the day. If you're in favor of this becoming business of the day, please raise your placard. If you're opposed to making this business of the day, okay, and if you'd like to abstain, all right, so by a vote of 17-1-0, we will be making this business of the day. That means that comments that are argumentative in nature can be made, and it also means that we can make a final vote on this recommendation today, meaning that the audience members will be able to vote on this today if it's brought to a vote. So we will continue with our speakers list exactly where I left off. I do go in order. Next is Representative Friedman. Where'd he go? All right, so next is Representative Bacharach.
Where are the next steps?
So to address the second question, I think we have a lot of people working on the resolution because we have a lot of facets to it. So like, I would have done it in the parent and laundry council. We kind of have different people that are interested in this. And from our conversations with all the different facets of the parents working on it, there are others. Like, Diane is on board with getting the data and getting that kind of thing. The library is actually, you know, looking into like the numbers and like the women. So in that sense, I think the next step to our work is always the practice.
You guys have 30 seconds.
Just representing background, I think that's a perfect example of a resource that's available that people may not have necessarily known about. And for example, it was closed, we walked hard and we found out that it was closed, and that would be very important. Being able to disseminate the knowledge of what's open and what's not open is incredibly important, and we just highlighted that there. And with that, just to backtrack, I'd like to motion to amend line 41 in response to Representative Goldman, where it says further information disseminated by residential programs, comma, the student assembly newsletter, comma, and the off-campus housing newsletter.
Could you repeat that one more time?
Line 41, where it says, and any further information is disseminated by residential programs, the student assembly newsletter, and the off-campus housing newsletter.
Chelsea, did you get that? Excellent. So now we're going into discussion on the amendment. First, Rep. Goldman. Wait for her to finish.
So we've talked then in terms of off-campus housing. Anybody who doesn't have like a specific address with residential programs on campus, they're automatically going to be newsletter. It could send out to partner directly. It could send out like once a month or once every week. Yeah. It's usually updated for off-campus.
Yeah. I believe there was a point of information.
Point of privilege.
Point of privilege? Yes.
There is something broken on this side. There's a draft on this part.
Unfortunately, this room is not very well insulated, and I think it's a problem we commonly have in the winter. I mean, you can double check and make sure it's not open. Yeah, I'm sorry if anyone is real cold. Moving on. I'm sorry. Representative Friedman. All right, so we've called a question on the amendment. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we will just vote on this amendment right now. If you're in favor, please raise your placards. If you're opposed, and if you'd like to abstain. By a vote of 19-0-1, this amendment does pass. Now we're going to move into the general discussion on the resolution as a whole. Ashley, Representative Friedman happens to be next, and Battaglia got you. Is there anyone else? Would it be helpful if I read off who I have on the speakers list right now? So continuing from where we left off, it would be Friedman, V.P. Wershaw, Stefanko, Kaufman, Lisa Liu, and Battaglia. Is there anyone else who would like to be on there? You're on the second speaker's list because you spoke once already. Diana? Okay. Yeah, sorry for not clarifying that, Philip. Is there anyone else who would like to speak? Yes.
If I had to make a motion, do I have to be on the speaker's list?
No, you never have to be on the speaker's list to make a motion. You can make a motion at any time. Is there anything else that needs to be clarified before Representative Friedman speaks? Cool. Go, Friedman.
Yes, I really want to tell you guys about the massive reversal of trends. A bit of legislative history and how we very coincidentally ended up with February break and also happened to be at the same time as Ithaca High School and the school district left out, rather than hiring our workload of teaching for the first time in the semester. That was a massive amount of just a light in on representative student leadership. And I really want to commend you guys for reversing that.
Awesome. Next on our speaker's list is Dee Dee Warshaw.
Motion to amend.
So there's been a motion to amend. Could you clarify what the motion is?
So this is actually just to further strengthen the resolution in terms of...
Oh, microphone.
Yeah. While I understand that this might not pass in its current form, this is to further strengthen this resolution to increase Cornell's communication efforts about February Race Services. So can I say the motion?
Yeah. No, you have to say it.
So the motion would be really further resolves, comma, the SA encourages the student assembly encourages Cornell Communication to provide information about operating February-based library dining and residential life services through electronic means, comma, which all undergraduate students have access to.
All right. I'm going to ask that you repeat that very, very slowly. And also, what line would it be on?
On line number 39.
So you mean like it would go right before the...
So it'll go right after the...
Okay.
Before.
Okay. So repeat it one more time very slowly.
We will further resolve, comma, the student assembly encourages cordial communication to provide information about operating federally grade libraries, comma, dining and residential.
Slow down a little bit more. Library, comma,
dining and residential life services through electronic means, comma, which all undergraduate students have access to.
Alright, do you have it?
This is going to be a much more effective way of telling all students about operating on rather than just
you're on it. Oh, for the... Sorry. So, the first person on the speakers list for this amendment...
The first person on the speakers list for this amendment is Representative Yang.
All right, next is Representative Hoffman. Is the microphone not working?
So I like this amendment, but I'm confused. Is this to change? So we're still going to have the templates?
The way that it's worded, we would still have the templates.
My interpretation is that the DPIL wants, like, Jolene and official university branding to send out this information. This is a recommendation, I guess, that works, and it's in addition to the other methods that we are described without getting information.
Okay.
That's my understanding.
Yeah, right now he's just clarifying with Chelsea to make sure she has language. Brett Bollycon? Yeah, I am going to let Siobhan respond, and then Rep. Johnson will go.
Yeah, just to sort of answer the three questions, I think they're very valid. So firstly, the current resolution suggests working with Communications Committee, which will be creating print media advertisements about these services. But I am suggesting actually they go to Cornell Communications, which is the administration which sends out blasts to the entire university that would inform them about this service. And in terms of Syed, in terms of Representative Ali Khan, I was just looking at efficiency and effectiveness while also being cost effective, and both in terms of reaching out to people and in terms of minimizing costs, I think this is possibly the most cost effective and the most effective way to reach out to the maximum number of undergraduate students. So in a sense, one blast that goes out to all students telling them that, you know, during February that this and this will be open and this and this will not be open will just be so much more effective.
Okay, next is Rep. Johnson.
So when students like this take the time to make recommendations, I trust that they put a lot of time into it, and that even beyond the research itself, if they're doing research, actual ring in the house, and we're asking questions about how they're going to go about doing the resolution, it kind of undermines the trust that I have in them, like, and the trust that it looks like we have in them. So if you are, like, really concerned with how they're going to do the resolution, I think that's also something that you can work on with them outside of this room on Thursday, because I'm trying to do this here, and especially with other students here, with really concerned with issues and have a lot of stuff on the agenda, I kind of think it's, like, going for a time to be discussing really minute details that can happen. These discussions can happen all the time. They send out a resolution on Tuesday, and you could talk to them between them. I know this is taking time too for me to say this, but like, this is like a common trend that we've been doing this year, and I think it's definitely something we should try to avoid so that we can actually address the resolution and then take them down.
Thanks, Emma. We've expired the speaker's list for the amendment. So there's a motion to vote on the amendment. Was that a formal motion?
Second.
Okay. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none, we are going to vote on this amendment. Please raise your placard if you are in favor of the amendment as it is written. Please raise your placard if you're opposed. Raise your hand high, otherwise I'm not going to count you. Okay, raise your hand if you're going to abstain. By a vote of 6-7, this fails. Now moving on to the resolution as a whole. There's been a motion to vote on the resolution. There's a second. Is there a dissent? All right, there is dissent. You have 30 seconds to explain your dissent. Remember, an explanation of dissent is an explanation of why you cannot vote right now, not your own opinion. Excellent. Go.
Okay.
You dissented, didn't you? Oh, yeah. I was going to,
but yeah. So I think that one of the main and, like, important aspects of this resolution has not been fully addressed, and that's how we're going to deal with some of the costs that this resolution imposes on the university. So before we actually vote on the resolution as a whole, I think we should definitely engage in the discussion a little bit more.
All right. So, yeah, you can't really – we're not going to go back and forth about the dissent. So, oh, is there a question from someone in the audience? I thought I saw a hand. No? Okay. That means we do have to vote to vote. So, if you're in favor of voting on this resolution, closing the discussion, please raise your placards. Okay. Is everyone's hands raised who intends to raise their hand? Excellent. Keep your hands up. I'm sorry. People were moving. If you're opposed. Lauren, are you up or down? Raise your hand if you'd like to abstain. So because this is a majority, we actually will vote because the vote was 11-9-0. I will allow you to give a closing remark if we are going to wrap up the resolution, which we are, and then Jordan will explain how we're going to vote.
So
2 minutes, though.
First of all, thank you to the three committees and everybody that has given us feedback. I don't want to discourage, like, crowdsourcing legislation, but I think Representative Johnson did bring up a good point. To follow up with Congress, the reason why I think this is a great way to have a lot of Congress on this resolution is that we divided ourselves up between 9 library and services, as well as having a care official. So after this resolution, if it passes, if it doesn't pass, no matter what we're going to be following up on it, we're going to do due diligence, we're going to work with communication. Thank you.
to it. Also, I just wanted to address the design that was given and try to help you quickly. There are ways to increase services without increasing costs, and that's why it's specific to reach out to these lawyer counties to get their expertise because we're doing this in our work on this campus. For example, in the library, I'll keep their lawyers open. There are ways we can protect the scheduling by keeping the same amount of hours, but schedule them in a way that one's open at one time, that the other one isn't open. And finally, there are places that are open that people don't know about, and that's a way to increase the services that are available and that create new costs. So that's definitely one thing that we'll look into if we come across that roadblock for the role. Thank you all. Please go.
All right, Jordan will explain how we're voting. Everyone in the audience, pay attention because you do get to vote.
February 31st is the recommendation to require majority to vote SA members to pass. Two community votes will also be allocated to the majority vote.
So first, what I'm going to do is take a vote from the community. Your options are yes, no, or abstain. So raise your hand if you feel one way or the other, and whatever the majority is, two community votes will go towards that total. Does anyone have any questions before we begin the vote? All right, seeing none, if you're a community or ex officio member who is in favor of this resolution, please raise your hand. Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. If you're opposed, great. If you'd like to abstain, all right. So by a vote of 7-0-1, there will be two community votes going towards the yes vote on the total student assembly vote. If you are in favor of this resolution and you're on the student assembly, please raise your hand. If you're opposed. And if you'd like to abstain. So by a total vote of 17-3-2, including the community vote, this resolution does pass.
Thank you for joining the meeting.
So there's been a motion to adjourn the meeting, and I am going to entertain that. Thank you guys for presenting, and also congratulations to Representative Selig and LaPointe on their first resolution.
Nothing's going to happen.
Thank you guys for coming.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.